And that qualified majority has to materialize, I think, within a period of 10 days. In other words, if the Commission thinks that the Netherlands is in breach, which it is, but that's a different story, all it needs is the support of a minority in the council to start a procedure. Then finally, at the end of this procedure, it can be decided whether a country should be fined. A normal fine would be, in the past it was 0.1% of GDP. Now it can be anywhere in the range of 0.2 to 0.5. This is quite a few billion euro in the Dutch case. When such a decision has to be made, again, there has to be a qualified majority in the council against such a measure to prevent it. So all the Commission has to secure is the support of a minority in the council. That's one part of the six-pack. The other part of the six-pack is something called, well, it's a mechanism on something they call macroeconomic imbalances. And I deliberately say something they call macroeconomic imbalances because it's not defined beforehand what we're talking about. It depends on what the Commission thinks a macroeconomic imbalance is. And at the moment, they have defined five or six different things that they call imbalances. I would highlight one of them. And that's an imbalance called, well, it's about competitiveness. It's about something called unit labor costs. The basic idea is that in order to support a country's competitiveness, you have to make sure that the wage paid per unit is not too high. What comes out of this mechanism, and that is becoming clearer and clearer, is an offensive by the Commission against the wage levels in quite a few number of countries. I think it was 8 or 9 countries that were in a report released a couple of months ago by the Commission. I admit I don't remember if the Netherlands was among them. Denmark was actually among them. Spain was among them. I think Finland was on. I can't remember all of them. One of the ironies is that even Greece was on the list, even though there has been a very, very significant decrease of wages in Greece. In terms of competitiveness, in the eyes of the Commission, wages are still too high. Now, I mean, in itself, it may not seem so serious that the Commission thinks the wages are too high. In this case, the problem is that the Commission has the power to impose a fine on the country that does not ensure that this imbalance is taken properly care of. Now, to someone like me from a country where, well, the different governments have been saying since 1972 that the European Community and the European Union would never ever be able to meddle with wages. They would never ever be able to attack the right to collective bargaining. Now, in this case, we have a mechanism whereby wages have to be lowered, and if they are not lowered, the country can be fined in the end. Okay, so much for the past couple of years, the most dramatic reforms of the past couple of years. Now let's go to the fiscal compact. And let's ask ourselves first, why do we need it? Why do we need the fiscal compact, and what is it about? My answer to the first question is we don't need it. And actually, I should think that many countries in the council would support that position. The reason why we are now discussing a new treaty, the fiscal compact, or the austerity treaty, as some would call it. I call it that on a regular basis. The reason it is now on the table, I believe, is mainly a very, very political one, and it has a lot to do with German politics. Late last year, Chancellor Merkel had had the, in her view, I guess, the enormous task of convincing the German public that it would be necessary for Germany to put a lot of money into the new loan fund, the European Stability Mechanism. According to many analysts and according to the information I've been able to gather on that matter, basically the fiscal compact was introduced by her because she needed to convince German politicians and the German public that we can safely put money into a new European loan fund with one hand, because on the other hand, we are a very active player in ensuring that those countries stick to a very, very strict budgetary policy. So, what's it about? Actually, the fiscal compact is a document of I think it's 10 pages, but it can be boiled down to something very, very simple. It's a new rule on limits of budgetary deficits. Every country, all the contracting parties, as they say, which is almost all of the countries in the European Union, has to, in all future, abide by a rule that the so-called structural deficit of the government budget should not exceed 0.5%. I think there's only a very, very small part of the European population that had ever heard of the concept structural deficit when this all of a sudden emerged in a treaty a couple of months ago. And I don't have time to go into the specifics. I just want to say a few things to describe what it's about. First, it's a budgetary limit that is much more ambitious than the one in force, which is a 3% limit on total deficit. Secondly, it is a figure that only emerges after very, very complicated calculations, very untransparent and very, very controversial. Thirdly, it is supposedly is it's to be a measure that shows the balance between income and expenditure of governments. But the discussion on what the structural deficit is and how it's calculated is highly controversial. And actually, the way you calculate it can come out very, very differently depending on what method you ask. One example: if you look at the structural deficit of Denmark in 2011 and you ask the Ministry of Finance in Denmark, they would say it's about 1%. If you ask the Commission, it would respond, it's about 3%. Now, when we're talking about a treaty that obliges a government to keep this figure very, very low, that is a very, very dramatic discussion, whether you calculate it one way or the other. So much about the structural deficit. Now, how is it going to be enforced? It's going to be enforced nationally. The plan is to have some sort of permanent arrangement, some sort of legislation that will ensure that the government will abide by this new budgetary rule, not just the coming years, but practically forever. I have a lot of nice statements on my computer from Angela Merkel, who states again and again that this is to be the kind of law that cannot be changed by any new parliamentary majority. The national law has to include some sort of sanctions regime that can ensure that even the government itself, should the government decide to run a budget deficit that is higher than the 0.5%, you will immediately have sanctions that ensures that the government is beaten into place. Some of these things, we don't know many of these details, because another intriguing thing about the fiscal compact is that once it's been adopted, only at that stage will the European Commission start considering how this is to be implemented in real legislation, what the details will look like. So even when the Irish have a referendum on the fiscal compact, they cannot know all the details, because that's to be decided later. Once all the countries, the necessary number of countries have ratified, then they will start working out the practicalities. A second set of the second level of enforcement will be via the European Court of Justice. Once it's adopted, and once every contracting member state has decided how it will be implemented nationally, then the other member states will have the opportunity and the possibility, not just in the short term, but practically forever, that whenever they think this treaty is not being enforced strongly enough at the national level, they can drag, a given country to the European Court of Justice. I guess we can return to more of the details on the fiscal compact. About the impact and the consequences, I think maybe if this kind of treaty had been considered 5 years ago, it wouldn't have appeared to be such a dramatic thing, because there you would see that most of the EU countries were not running serious deficit. But at the moment, 24 of the 28 EU countries are actually running a deficit that is pretty high. So potentially, this is something that will affect many countries, and many of them will have to do very, very drastic cuts. One example, Belgium. Belgium is a country that is coming in deeper economic trouble, and they will have to, I think they're running a deficit to the sound of 6 or 7% at the moment. They will have to bring that down in the short term to at least a 1% deficit. That entails very, very dramatic cuts in Belgium. And I think if you take the fiscal compact with all the other mechanisms I mentioned before, on macroeconomic imbalances, the Euro Plus Pact, the Stability Pact, blah, blah, blah. If you take that lot and put it together with the fiscal pact, it's pretty clear to me that what we will see mostly in the coming years will be dramatic cuts on social expenditure, on pensions. It will be dramatic attacks on labor law, dramatic attacks on wages. That is, I think, the effect it will have. Also, what effect will it have on the economic situation in more general terms? I think that it's becoming pretty clear that the medicine that has been served to the countries in crisis in the periphery of the Eurozone, which is austerity, cuts on state budgets, that it's pretty much living up to the old dogmas of Keynes, that if you're in a crisis, and if you cut expenditure, and if you don't use public investments, there's a pretty strong chance that what you will see is a downward spiral.